Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Hurricane Hal Needham, host of the GeoTrek podcast. Welcome to a brand new season of the podcast where we tell stories of extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. Whether you're tuning in on the road, at home, or out on the trail, get ready for a season packed with exciting insights and actionable stories that bring you closer to the forces shaping our planet. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and join the conversation on your favorite listening platform. It's that time of the year where a lot of us are staying in on the weekend and watching televised sports. I'm particularly talking about NFL football. This time of the year, the playoffs are going through. We're working towards the Super Bowl. And what you've noticed if you've been watching the games this year, a lot of extreme weather, a lot of snow games, a lot of games where they're out there in the snow and cold while we're in our warm living rooms. Well, did you know that the weather can substantially impact the outcomes of sporting events? Today, we're going to talk to meteorologist Mark Packett with Earth Networks Incorporated. He's actually investigated and researched and looked at that, worked at that interface of the impacts of weather on sports. We're going to be talking to Mark all about that today. Well, without further ado, Mark, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast.
Thank you, Hal. I greatly appreciate it. And how are you doing today?
Mark, you know, when you and I started working together professionally, we had a conversation and you shared something that surprised me. You said there's a sector of people working at that interface of how meteorology and extreme weather can impact the outcomes of sporting events. And you've worked in this sector for some time. Could you tell us a little bit about that work you've done?
Sure. I mean, the easiest way to see that work in action is if you're a weekend gambler and you have a DraftKings or a FanDuel app on your phone, just watch the totals and how they change for a game that has weather involved in it. For example, we saw the Baltimore game from the division, the Philly game in the divisional round of the playoffs. Forecast kept on getting worse as we got closer to it, and the total kept on coming down. Because a lot of NFL people that are in the know don't like to play, think that there's going to be a lot of points if the weather is going to be bad. Everyone is looking for an edge if you're a gambler, whether you're the pro that spends their weekends in Las Vegas or just the average Joe that's on their phone and betting $5 or $10 a game. You want to win. You don't want to lose. So sometimes weather has a little bit of an edge cooked into it, and not everyone pays attention to that.
Mark, that makes sense for an NFL game that on average, less points might be scored in a game with adverse weather. That makes a lot of sense. What about the outcome of the game and who wins and who loses and the probabilities of that? I mean, looking back to the last day of the divisional round in the playoffs, we saw two snow games, one in Philadelphia, one in Buffalo, places where we're not shocked to see snow. In the Eagles game, they were playing the LA Rams, a place where there's hardly ever any snow. So, I mean, does that play into it? Do the bookies and do the statisticians say, hey, a snow team would be more likely, or a team from a cold climate might be more likely to win a snow game than a team from a warm climate?
That's a double-edged sword there. You often hear Miami heading north to go play in a cold place. Their record isn't good, the Dolphins. So for sure, generally, if you're used to one type of weather and you train in it and practice in it and generally play and live in it, you get a dramatically different climate or a weather game, it's going to affect you. So the Rams, the Dolphins, we saw the Dolphins in the playoffs last year play one of the coldest NFL playoff games in all time in Kansas City, where I believe the wind chill was in the minus 20s, and they lost the game. Kansas City was a better team, but I'm sure the weather didn't help Miami there either. I say it's a double-edged sword because some of the best quarterbacks in dealing with cold and snow aren't really from places where it's cold and snow. Two that stand out are Tom Brady. Played most of his career in New England and excelled in snow and cold games. He had an incredible winning record, and he's from San Mateo, California. They don't see a lot of snow. Another great example of that is Aaron Rodgers. He's a Northern California boy as well, and he excelled at home in Green Bay when it's cold so often. Now, he did lose quite a bit in the playoffs at home, but overall his record was winning. But I think in general, Rodgers and Brady are examples of people that learn to play in that type of weather and then excel in it.
Yeah, you know, another one that comes to mind is Brett Favre, right? From Southern Mississippi on the Gulf Coast. degrade in the snow in Green Bay. So that's an interesting perspective. They don't necessarily look at where you're from, doesn't necessarily dictate how you perform in, say, cold and snow. But do you think statisticians look at a player over the course of their career? I mean, will they actually drill down to an individual player and say, this player does well in the cold, or this player does not do well in certain weather conditions?
Yeah, I mean, you do see that. Again, rating back to the last round of divisional playoff games, Lamar Jackson was 8-2 in games under 35 degrees. Now, he plays his home game in Baltimore, so it's a cold weather location in December and January, but he's from Miami. So, again, you kind of have a dichotomy there. But in terms of particular players, yeah, you do. I know David Price, a baseball pitcher, was famously known for hating pitching in the cold and the wet weather. And so a lot of gamblers would flock on a game that he's pitching in cold and rain to the other team. And more often than not, they were right. The odds were in their favor. But there is not so much individual players in the NFL, but positions are what they look at. There's a pretty widely known stat out there, a graph that you can just Google, that if the wind is 15 miles per hour or more, or the temperature is 35 degrees or below, offensive coordinators will tend to do two things. They'll call more running plays, and they'll call more short passing plays. They won't throw the ball down the field, especially in the wind situation, but even in the cold. And so that's what a lot of people will look at and say, okay, going back to the Dolphins, instead of Tyreek Hill getting the ball way down the field, maybe they'll do more short passes to Jonnu Smith, their tight end, or Jalen Waddle, a slot receiver, and maybe run the ball more instead of going to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, and Mark, you're sharing some of that nuance. Now I could see if a team, if their bread and butter is going long, you know, maybe that gets reduced a bit in a windy game where you're saying they tend to throw a little shorter.
For sure, that's 100% accurate. That, I mean, it's just physics. If you're throwing the ball up 50 yards in the air, you know what I mean? The wind is going to play some role with that. And we've seen that in games. That's 100% accurate.
Mark, you mentioned that, you know, some of these players from warmer climates tended to do really well in the snow, like Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady. When you and I were talking, you mentioned as well, this insight completely surprised me. You know, I would have thought quarterbacks in general would prefer 70 degrees, sunshine, no wind. And you were saying Brady and some others actually preferred playing, say, on a sloppy field where it's rainy and muddy. I mean, why would that give him an advantage from his perspective?
I think the answer to that is I was watching that Philly Ram divisional playoff game. And after the game, they obviously interviewed Jalen Hurst and Saquon Barkley. But then they went to Darius Slay, who's a secondary player for the Eagles. And he talked about how difficult his footing was. Just secondary players in general are playing the whole game and the games in front of them. So they're backpedaling, going side to side. And he talked about how treacherous the slipping was, and all he had to do was take one big step the wrong direction and he's down on his bum, for lack of a better term, and the other team has the potential of a big play. And we saw Saquon Barkley do exactly that. He ran two huge runs, touchdowns of 60 plus and 70 plus yards, and the footing definitely could have played a role in that. That offensive players in football know where they're going to go, so they can sort of plan, okay, I'm going to step here and plant my foot and shift my weight. While defensive players don't have that luxury, they have to react to what the offensive player does. And I think if the footing is treacherous, the offensive player could have an advantage. And you mentioned, again, I hate to show my New England side here, but one of Tom Brady's most memorable games of his career was a snowstorm game in October of all times in Foxborough in 2009. He threw five touchdowns in the first half, and that was one of the best games of his career in a blazing snowstorm. I know blazing probably isn't the best adjective, but it was a sight to behold for sure.
Well, that's really interesting, and it sounds like you're saying because defensive players have to be reactive, when you get a snow-covered field or a muddy field, it makes it harder for them to react like that, whereas the offensive players kind of, you know, for them, the footing's an issue too, but they might have a plan or know where they're going to cut and where they're going to go. Maybe gives the offense an advantage in those cases.
Yeah, I mean, that's all offense is scripted. You're supposed to be here. You're supposed to 10 yards out. You're supposed to cut to the middle, that kind of thing. So you're right. You still have the issues planting, but at least in your mind, you know about when you're going to do it, and then you do it. In the defensive players, it's all reaction, all reaction. Yep.
Mark, let's shift the perspective to baseball, cold weather baseball. We're thinking playoffs, New York, Boston. It's raining and, you know, rain showers and 42 degrees. How does that play out? I mean, who gets the advantage there? Is that an advantage to pitchers, to batters? And how does that play out?
Well, that's just pretty easy physics. The warmer air is and the more moisture it holds, the lower the density of air. That's just the chemistry, the physics of the atmosphere. So when it's cold, the ball won't travel as well. And if anyone who's played even Little League baseball can say when they're batting and the weather's cold, that if you don't make good contact, your hands hurt. It stinks. And I think cold weather in general is a big factor for the pitcher. Unless, like, you have specific instances, like I mentioned David Price, he hated pitching in the cold. Obviously, another huge factor, if the wind is blowing in, that helps the pitcher. I've seen Major League Baseball with the whole new stats that every sport has. It's like this ball got a boost of 6 feet because of the wind and the temperature, that kind of thing. And you can see that it's actually calculated. So could be a difference of a long fly ball at the wall to a double off the wall to a home run a few rows back. And we talked about NFL going back to that Eagles game. They scored, I think the final score was what, 27-23 or 27-22, something like that. They scored almost 50 points. So you can have bad weather games where it scores a lot of points. I think in baseball, it's more predictive that if it's cold and the wind's blowing in, you're not going to have an offensive explosion, especially at some of these older ballparks that are more open and more exposed to the wind and the weather, like Wrigley Field and Fenway Park.
Mark, that's really interesting. You're talking really a lot about the physics of the atmosphere, how well the ball can carry. You know, I've wondered too, does dexterity come to play? You know, you'll get a batter up there with batting gloves. It would seem to me that the dexterity, you know, when you get cold and windy, your hands get numb. I could see the advantage of what you're saying atmospherically, like the ball isn't going to carry as well. But then also I'd imagine pitchers with cold hands. I mean, maybe it's case by case, but I could see there being dexterity issues for the pitchers getting a grip, right?
Yeah, definitely. They lose their grips on pitches that require specific spin, like a curveball or a slider, stuff like that, where a fastball, it's more just letting it rip. But yeah, pitchers can have definitely control issues if it's wet and cold, for sure.
Mark, you mentioned how in baseball, the ball won't carry as far in cold weather. I grew up in the Northeast. You know, I never was a huge hitter. Now I can blame the weather now. I always thought it was my skills. Here it was just the meteorology, right?
Right. And if you were just born in Denver at a mile high, the ball would have traveled a lot further. Those fly balls would have been a lot more impressive for you.
Oh, didn't that come out in the early years of the Rockies? Weren't they? They were looking at that, right? Weren't there a lot of home runs out there?
Yeah. So they had to do a couple things. And the first thing they did was obviously push back the fences. Second thing they did was, and this is a catch word in baseball now, is add a humidor to baseball. So what they're basically doing is, before the game's played, they just try to store these baseballs in a controlled environment where they're not exposed to the higher elevation. And obviously, oftentimes, Denver has some very low dew points. And both of those things would tend to dampen the ball a little bit, to like give it a little bit less spring. And so the ball wouldn't hit as far. Unfortunately, Coors in Denver still is the best Major League Baseball in terms of offense. And the reason is, once they put back down the fences, the acreage in the outfield became by far the greatest in all of Major League Baseball. So what happens, you still only have three outfielders, but now they have to cover a lot of more ground. So you see a lot more bloop hits get in there. Balls go into the gap. Doubles and triples are up as well, as long as batting average, even though they did kind of contain the home runs a little bit.
I see what you're saying. Pushing the fences back, it maybe reduces those homers, but now the outfield is enormous, right?
Right, and so they have more ground to cover and more chances the ball's going to drop in if it's hit to them. Yep.
Well, hey, GeoTrekkers, we're at that part of the podcast where we cover our weathered wisdom, where we ask a guest to recount in their personal lives what's a weather event that most influenced them or got them interested and excited about weather. Mark, for you, your weathered wisdom, can you think of a major weather event in your life that got you interested in meteorology or that really stands out to you and influenced you personally or professionally?
Sure, I do. I'm going to say it's a two-way tie. Obviously, you can tell that I love sports. So growing up, I played a lot of basketball. And then when I was getting a little bit older, like middle school and then eighth grader, I started in high school as well. I started coaching younger kids, like biddy ball, like fourth and fifth grade. And so in appreciation, the guy who ran the program was a counselor in for basketball camp in Orleans, Massachusetts, which if you don't know, it's right at the elbow of Cape Cod. So I would go to that camp, and that was a stay there camp sort of thing. So the year before my senior in high school, so this was 1991, the summer of 91, I was on in Orleans in August, and what came up the coast? Hurricane Bob. And so Hurricane Bob, we had to get booked, shuttled to the emergency shelters, which was the local high school. And neat fact, I was east of the eye. And so I you don't often in New England say you get to be east of the eye. So that was a cool situation. But being from New England, my first love was snowstorms. So the tie one is when I was a freshman in college. So this is the winter of 92, 93. My hometown right near Worcester, Massachusetts, had their biggest snowstorm in record in early to mid-December. I think it was like December 10th through 12th, 1992. And it was a great snowstorm to be involved because I was a freshman in college just learning about computer models and forecasting and stuff like that. And it was just the classic New England snowstorm that had elevation differences, heavy, wet snow, rain at the coast, strong winds. So that was a blast. Snowstorms are my favorite.
Man, this is fantastic. So the early 90s, it sounds like you were rocking and rolling there in New England. Snowstorms, Hurricane Bob, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, we had my 4 years in college, we had three great snow winters and one very strong El Nino winter where we got almost no snow. So it was like a tale of two cities, but three out of the four winters were really great.
You know, my college years were about the same as yours. I was also in the Northeast, a little farther south and west of you in central Pennsylvania, but getting dumped on most of those winters. It was a very active time winter-wise in the Northeast.
Right, sure was, yep.
Well, Mark, getting back into talking about the influence of weather on sports and betting, we know that the weather can influence the odds of sporting events, and it can really tie in there to betting and gambling. So, like, who researches this relationship between weather and sports? Is that coming mostly out of the gambling industry? Are there folks in academia doing that? I mean, where is this research coming from?
I think it's a little bit of both, but probably more just the private gamblers and then the people who set the line. You do see, like I said, if you pay attention to the lines, you can see totals change. And they're not, obviously not changing all because of the weather, but sometimes they are, or player props will change. We talked about how that the weather was going to be windy or cold, that the running back may be becoming more involved. If we had a research of what Saquon's running rushing yards line was yesterday, we would probably have seen, as the forecast for bad weather increased, his rushing total probably would have went up. So it's a little bit of combination of both, but I think a lot of times it's the smart wagerers that want to do their own homework that will factor in the weather the most.
Interesting. Well, let's talk about that. So are there independent researchers that will drill down in some of this and maybe look for complex relationships that others might not see?
Well, I think you may say researchers may be too strong of a term. I think it's just the average Joe and Mo who are gambling. Some people, like I said, no one likes to lose, but if you're putting a legitimate amount of money on the line, any edge is a huge advantage. It's so hard to beat the books in Vegas. So anytime you get even a small edge, you use it to your advantage. And I think that's what the smart wagerers will do. They'll be looking a week in advance and say, okay, what about these upcoming games this weekend? Do you see any bad weather? Is there any chance in any bad weather? If that's the case, is it going to be rainy? Is it going to be snowy? Is it going to be windy? What's the specifics? And then they'll try to figure out a game flow and show where that advantage may be best used at. So again, using that Philly game is, I think the smart wager, as soon as they saw it was going to be snow and accumulating snow, maybe Saquon would have been the way to go, because certainly not going to throw the ball a lot. And so I think rushing would have helped people yesterday.
I see what you're saying with the snow and the slippery conditions. You're probably both teams are going to shift a little more towards the run, and you have a major powerhouse running back there, Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you just think, I mean, this is a lot of hindsight, but yeah, we should really be funneling the ball his way.
Yeah, no, makes a lot of sense for sure. I know he's probably had a lot of experience there playing in the snow. Strange fact, my mom and dad are both from a small little town right outside of Allentown, Pennsylvania, a tiny little town called Copley. And that's where Saquon, well, I guess they just did Saquon Barkley Day. He ended up there throughout a lot of his high school and stuff. So but I remember playing, you know, pickup football, and it was constantly snow and ice out there as well. So that part of the country, you're getting a lot of it when you grow up in that environment.
For sure. And I think, Mike Trout is from like Toms River, New Jersey, and he always did pretty well in cold weather. And he would talk about playing, if you grew up there playing March and April baseball, often the weather is awful. And you get used to it though a little bit.
Mark, how important is having a packed house home field advantage as far as crowd noise? Does that play into odds at all? And conceivably, could there be a forecast of a rainy, windy game, and they say, you know, the bleachers might be half empty? Would that ever tie in at all, or are people more looking for field conditions and what's going to happen to like the ball traveling, you know, whether that's a baseball player hitting the ball, a quarterback throwing the ball? Does the crowd come into play at all?
Yeah, it does. I mean, you see Vegas always factors in 3 points for the home team no matter what. That's just how it is. So they always say, like, for example, the Bills Kansas City game is, I think, Kansas City's favored by 1.5. They always say, well, if it was on a neutral field, that would mean Buffalo's the 1.5 point favorite, because they're factoring in 3 points. I think in NFL, they probably sell out every game, even in like that horrific, so cold game in Kansas City last playoff against Miami. It was going to be a packed house. So maybe that's not so much of a factor in the NFL, but it could be during the regular season if the weather's going to be really bad and it's two so-so teams, or in college as well. I mean, even at the Penn State, when they had their home playoff game here just before Christmas, it was 22 degrees, windy. It was one of the coldest games played at Beaver Stadium, and they didn't sell out just because the weather was so bad. It was cold, and plus – holds 110,000 as compared to most football stadiums holding 60,000. But yeah, I think that would play a role if that's the case, if the weather's bad enough to make fans stay home.
I'm always amazed at these cold weather climate football venues, especially in the playoffs. They're going to pack it out. I mean, you get to Kansas City, you get to Green Bay, you get to Buffalo. It almost doesn't matter how cold, windy, or snowy it is. They're very loyal fan bases, and they're going to be there for the most part, right?
The NFL is a juggernaut, and especially when you're winning, but some environments in specifically are known for their rabid fans, Buffalo being one. Philly is a little bit of a different animal, because maybe it's a little bit more of a tougher crowd, but Kansas City certainly has their reputation for being very supportive of the team as well.
Mark, what about other sports? We talked about football, we talked about baseball. Where do you see weather influencing other sports as far as odds and gambling?
Well, that's a great question. And I got into this almost 10 years ago to mainly legalized betting wasn't legal yet, for lack of a better term. But what was coming out was DFS, which stands for Daily Fantasy Sports. If you're not familiar with that, that's basically you go on your DraftKings app, you draft a team of players that are playing today, and each player has a salary, and you keep track of the stats, and whoever has the most stats at the end of the day wins. For DFS, is all kinds of sports, but let's just concentrate on the four major U.S. sports: is hockey, basketball, baseball, football. Well, you would think, well, hockey and basketball are indoors. I mean, there's not really a lot of weather going on. Well, what happened a few years ago, or right at the beginning when DFS took off, There was a rainstorm in New Orleans, a lot of rain, and the, I think it's called, I forget the name of the Pelicans court, but it leaky roof, and they had to cancel the game, and it was right before lock. Now, for a meteorologist, there's no way we're going to predict that the roof is going to leak and that it's going to cancel a game, but whoever used players in that game, they got zeros for stats, and if you used a lot of players or any players from that game, more likely than not, you were going to lose. So that's just an example of how, like, even hockey or basketball can have some weather influence. In hockey, we're also seeing more games being played outdoor. For example, next hockey season, I already know that the two outdoor games that they're going to play are in Tampa and in Miami. So you have to think, how is potentially warm weather going to affect hockey players that are playing a game outdoors? Maybe someone should do some research on that.
Mark, really interesting insights. You're sharing some perspectives a lot of folks wouldn't think of. I thought it was interesting when you mentioned an NBA basketball game indoors canceled from a leaky roof. I know back in the day, this might have been, I believe, in the 90s, the Houston Astros playing in the Astrodome, they had some rained out games because of flooding. And Houston tends to flood a lot. And there have been times where games have been flooded out, even though it's an indoor game.
Yeah, most of the time, an indoor game, you just ignore the weather influence. But every now and then, the old Mother Nature has something to say with that, even though it's indoors.
Mark, fascinating insight. So exciting to bring you on our podcast. Before we close out, any last insights you'd love to share with our listeners about this interface between extreme weather and the outcomes on sports and sports gambling?
I'd like to, just like to share that baseball is my true love. That was the sport I always followed the most. And I think if you were a serious wagerer, or even not serious wager, just you wanted to just play with some money, I think what I would do, and I don't always listen to my advice because I'm not that disciplined, just bet some baseball games, but bet totals at parks like Wrigley Field and Fenway Park. And those two stand out in particular for me because they're open. They're not like the new baseball stadiums, like New Yankee Stadium. You see the stadium is just so tall and open and closed that weather, especially wind, doesn't always make it down to the field. But Wrigley Field, if the wind is blowing out or in, especially from left or right field at Wrigley Field, it plays a whole different ball game. So I think what I will do is, and I'm asking anyone to volunteer and do with me, just pay attention in the new baseball season. If there's a game that's going to be cold and the wind's blowing in, bet the under in Wrigley Field and see what happens. And if it's the opposite, if it's going to be warm and humid and the wind blows out, bet the over and let's see what happens.
I see what you're saying. In these open ballparks like Fenway Park, Wrigley, you're saying the wind could really influence how far the ball can carry and might have a big influence on the total score.
Exactly. Yeah, I think that's a real advantage. Unfortunately, Vegas also knows that. And you'll see that once baseball season comes around, once the set of games say it's a Tuesday night are settled, they'll start putting the totals for Wednesday's games. But none of the lines will show Wrigley Field's lines until the morning of the game. And so the unknown rumor or the known rumor in throughout the wagering industry is that Vegas is checking the weather in Wrigley and wants to confirm it first. So it's generally known that Wrigley Field in Chicago is the most weather-sensitive baseball field, and weather can play a huge role there.
Yeah, Mark, that's interesting. You get there in the northern part of Chicago, Wrigley Field. I think back to Soldier Field. There was a big Eagles-Bears playoff game, if you remember the Fog Bowl. I think in the late 80s where fog just came in off Lake Michigan, very susceptible there to the weather, huh?
Yeah. In Wrigley Field is, I think, a block and a half or two blocks right from Lake Michigan. So yeah, it doesn't take much lake influence to have some major impacts there.
Mark, thank you so much for sharing these insights. This was a really interesting podcast. I know a lot of our audience loves sports, and probably few people have heard an in-depth discussion about how the weather can impact sports and betting odds as well. So appreciate you coming on the podcast. I think our audience is really going to enjoy this conversation I had with you today.
Yeah, this was a blast. Thanks, Al. And thanks for Jeremiah for getting me in here too. This is a lot of fun. Thank you.
Wow, what an exciting episode here of the GeoTrek podcast. Very timely with the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl. We're kind of in that season where a lot of people are watching sports. A lot of people may be betting or gambling on sports. And we heard today from Mark Paquette about how extreme weather can influence the outcome of these games. Really three take-home points I got from this episode. Number one, gamblers are looking for any possible edge that can give them an advantage. So even if weather only has a slight influence on a game, it's something that gamblers and bettors may still consider as they're considering the outcome and how a game may actually play out. Number two, I thought it was interesting that Mark mentioned sometimes home field advantage can have a big influence, but not always. And he mentioned some of this is case by case. He mentioned the Miami Dolphins, who are used to playing in South Florida, their home field. It's always warm and sunny down there. They have a very poor record of playing football in cold weather. So it sounds like it's case by case, but it can have an influence and could be considered for some games. Really, the big take-home point for me, though, number three, is that weather really can influence or change the strategy of a game. And Mark mentioned for NFL football, in adverse weather, like wind, rain, snow, typically we start to see more running plays and less passing plays. And so that could help people really dissect that and say, okay, if this team is going to do more running, how does their running game look? And so it seems like changing the strategy of a game, you can start to kind of unravel that into how that could influence the result. And I thought that was one of the big take homes for me, that really the weather can influence how we strategize or the play calls that we use during the game. Anyway, very fascinating episode. I know our listeners are going to love it. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to share your expertise with us here on the podcast. Hey, a huge thank you to our listeners. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast, for sharing it with your friends. Because of your loyalty and your following, you've enabled us to be a top podcast on the topic of natural disasters and extreme weather. Also, a huge thank you to our GeoTrek production team, Jeremiah Long, Ashley Anderson, Braxton Brown. They do the magic behind the scenes to edit these versions to really get a great professionally sounded podcast out there, publicized and shared with the public. Finally, make sure you subscribe to the GeoTrek podcast on your favorite listening platform to make sure you do not miss any upcoming episodes. Thanks again to our faithful audience. This is Dr. Hurricane Hal signing off, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.